You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford. Part one of Ray Farmer's Presser in the books. Part two still to come. We're going to go to the phone lines now, get some instant reaction from Pat in Akron. Pat, welcome to the show.
Hey, guys. Thanks a million for taking my call.
You got it, bro.
Appreciated the deal with Ray Farmer. Interested, of course, in what the second go-around is. I've got a question, though. Something's concerned me for a long time, and that is about the scouts. Who determines who's going to be the scouts? Who do they report to? Specifically, Johnny Manziel. Who scouted him? And I'll just make a comment, and then I'll turn the line.
So who scouted him? Every single person involved in the personnel department scouted Johnny Manziel. You have certain scouts that are assigned to certain areas, SEC, based on regions of the country, not necessarily conferences. But okay. A guy like Johnny Manziel and the quarterbacks, you can believe that every possible decision maker from the football and personnel side was there to see him live at games, was there for the workouts, the private workouts, et cetera, et cetera. And Johnny Manziel was thoroughly evaluated by everybody and ultimately ended up, right or wrong, history will only tell us which is the case, as the top-ranked quarterback on the Browns board. Now, that was from scouts, and that goes all the way, at the end of the day, as Ray Farmer said, it's collaborative, so that's Mike Pettine's input. Kyle Shanahan, who was the offensive coordinator at the time, his input. Dow Loggins, who was the quarterback coach, he had input. All the scouts ultimately report to Ray. It's Ray, Bill Kuharik, Morocco Brown, and then Dan Sagany's the top guy on the pro side of things. But those are that's the personnel department. Then you have a bunch of scouts that were brought in under Ray Farmer who report to him.
Okay.
For a team that's looking for a franchise quarterback, they're all going through. They all went through, Teddy Bridgewater, Johnny Manziel, Blake Bortles, Derek Carr, Jimmy Garoppolo that year. All of those guys were thoroughly evaluated by everybody.
Well, that's quite a heritage to have to go through, no doubt. How then possibly, and I'm saying this with a question, not the derogatory statement, how could he possibly not get identified as not even a recovering, but as a self-admitted alcoholic? Certainly that should have been brought out, discussed, and that should have had a huge impact as to the decision made with Johnny Manziel. I mean, you don't become an alcoholic in 2 years or 1 year. It evidently would have showed up in his off-the-field behavior. And I've often wondered if it was ever really noticed what was said about it, because that's going to something that he's not just because he becomes a NFL quarterback is all of a sudden not going to be an alcoholic anymore.
So these teams do a ton of background work on these players, and just so you know, the Browns weren't the only team that had a first round grade on Johnny Manziel. Dallas would have, and had the Browns not traded up to take him, Kansas City was going to take him, and they have said that publicly. So. It's something that was an issue, and you got to remember, and you guys have, and if you think back and are really honest with yourselves about it, if from the press conferences early last year, Johnny Manziel is very good in those situations. He was coached very well. He is a very charming guy. He knows what to say and how to say it, and I think he was probably very effective at convincing people of where he was. Now, he had to go through some things, and it seems like get his life on the right track, but it's tough. How much do you get to know these people and when you go through this process?
Not very much. You really don't. And I mean, I know they try to spend as much time as they can in understanding the inside and outs, but ultimately you have to do this for how many prospects throughout the potential first round. And at some case, you got to give a guy a benefit of the doubt. And I think in that in some cases is what led Johnny Manziel to fall as far as he did, but yet not fall far enough, as some people might think.
Let's go to Chevy in New Jersey now, our man. Chevy, what's up, brother?
Hey, guys, thanks. I think that listening to Ray Farmer, and he was trying to appealing to the public to forgive him, that I really didn't make those decisions. We made those as a group. That's kind of scary. And I don't think he really has an overall grasp of the roster as a whole and a vision for the team. It's kind of surreal and scary because him and Pettine are talking about the bottom of the roster all the time. and you know, McCown's going to do this, and we want to, and they're not looking toward the future like even you guys are saying that, you know, we want to see what we have in Johnny and, you know, plan this thing out for the big picture. It's kind of scary, guys.
I hear you. I hear you. And I think that he's just trying to give some insight that it is a process, that it's not him sitting in a room picking players, that he is working with other people. But, you know, then I guess the net of accountability just spreads for what's gone on thus far, at least in early production. Now, there are guys that are drafted that it takes them a while to make an impact. Now, Cam Irving, I think, to be fair, hasn't been given – he hasn't been given the opportunity.
No.
And now maybe that means he's not good enough to get the opportunity to beat out John Greco, which
right.
would be scary in and of itself. But it certainly was, you know, right now the results from those four first-round picks are not good.
They're minimal at best.
They're not good. They're not acceptable. And I think that everybody's searching for answers as to why that was the case. Let's go to Frank in Lexington now. Frank, welcome.
Hey, guys, what's going on? How are you?
Good, man.
Good.
Hey, Nathan, I was talking to you on Twitter yesterday. I wanted to make it clear I wasn't calling you out. I just tagged you in it so we could have a conversation about what's been going on. But, guys, I got a general question. If, you know, they decide to go with Johnny for the rest of the season and it works out, that's great. But if it doesn't work out, do you think that that's going to be the ultimate reason why this administration may end up being dismissed?
Just Johnny? Or
yeah, well, I mean, because when we were talking yesterday on Twitter, we were talking about the importance of getting a quarterback.
Yep.
And if it doesn't work, because we were talking about Joe Thomas getting traded for a first-round pick.
Sure.
If it doesn't work, they would have to package him up and get another one probably in this year's draft. And figure that out. So, I mean, there's other reasons, but I would think that probably has to be the biggest one. When you,
I don't think it would be just a swing and miss on quarterback. I think that if it came down to it, and listen, I like Mike Pettine a lot and I like Ray Farmer a lot, but if things go where the wins are not mounting up, you're not seeing the development of your younger players and getting very little return on your investment from free agents or from your draft class,
right.
That's when things are going to get reevaluated. I don't think it hangs on the success of Johnny Manziel, but in terms of if Johnny Manziel isn't good, does that seal their fate? No. If Johnny Manziel is good, does that seal their fate the other way? Maybe. If Johnny Manziel comes out, plays well, rallies the team, and all of a sudden you end on a positive note, winning, let's call it, four of your last six games or five or four of your last seven games, that gives them an opportunity, I think, to maybe get one more year. If Johnny shows improvement, if Justin shows improvement, if Cam plays and starts to play well, if you see these young guys who are getting opportunity playing well and developing, then maybe it helps. But right now, the contributions from young players are not – they're non-existent. Some of that has to do with their performance.
Yep.
But some of that also has to do with opportunity. I'm still – I know that Justin Gilbert was a very talented athlete. He hasn't really got an opportunity to play corner in the NFL. Now, maybe he's earned it. Maybe he hasn't. Ray Farmer's talking about that. But until I see him go out there and play corner and fail, I won't know if he can or can't. Same with Johnny. That's why I want to see him. Same with Cam Irving right now. I don't know if Cam Irving's any good. Does he look great when they go out in those jumbo packages? No, but I haven't seen him play guard yet. I haven't seen him play a full game at a position.
Right, and that's the whole point that you've made time and time again that I've kind of like edified is – when you're in season, you're so focused on your opponent and winning on Sunday that I would not be surprised that if Cam Irving takes less than 15 snaps as a part of the starting offense, I bet Johnny gets half of those when Josh McCown is healthy and as a starter. He might get a handful of reps. And Justin Gilbert probably gets zero reps with the starting defense as a part of the potential game plan.
You know what's interesting? When we heard Josh McCown talk about his time in Carolina and how he developed that connection with Gary Barnidge, he noted that under John Fox at that time, they did a lot of live practice. 8 reps a day of ones versus ones. 8 reps a day of twos versus twos. From my understanding, the Browns don't do one of those.
Well, the rules have changed, which don't allow you to be in pads more than the one day.
No, but you could still do ones versus one and twos versus twos to give people a game simulation opportunity to make plays. But does that take so much away from your game planning?
It does.
But those are good Carolina teams.
They are good Carolina teams. But and I know, and everybody's process is different. You know, there were days that even when we were winning, that Marty Schottenheimer, we'd go out and start practice in our pads, even though, as I mentioned, we're winning, we're stopping the run, we're running the football, we're a physical football team, but he just wanted us to keep our edge where we would go out and do the first half of practice, you know, week 10, 11, 12, when, you know, the getting's getting tough, and we'd bang, and we'd get through 9-on-7, we'd get through the first period of special teams, and he'd give us a break for about 3-4 minutes, and he'd allow us to take the pads off, then put on the shells, and when you get into the foo-foo 7-on-7 portions of practice, where you don't need to bang anymore, and go through those team sessions and the 7-on-7 and the second period of special teams, you don't need pads. He gave us that reprieve, but you had to prove to him on Sundays and deserve it. Otherwise, you lose. You're in pads all 3 days or all 2 days, both days, Wednesday, Thursday. And it keeps your edge. It keeps you tackling well. It keeps the bang. You know, you just can't go out there and lay down and go through the motions. Or
it also gives you a chance, though, to progress and to show that, hey,
it does.
I can make plays.
And I mean, my play in practice along is what led me to get an opportunity to play in packages. And then when I played well in packages, it grew into other packages and eventually became the starter. That's the progress. And then,
so would you agree with this then, that in today's NFL, or at least the way the practices are conducted now in terms of game preparation, it is very difficult to show something in practice in your own technique, because you might go out there and make plays playing in the Bengals technique.
Correct.
But that's just scout team stuff.
Yep. And in some cases, you don't want to be the guy, either on the offense or the defensive side of the ball, giving that look, that's going full speed, wanting to improve, practice your technique, and make plays. Because then you make the offense bad, and the coordinator gets pissed,
and the quarterback gets
pissed, and the offensive line, you know, gets mad at you for coming a little bit harder than they expected on a certain stunt, and you make them look bad on film. They've got to replay the down, and then all of a sudden there's animosity in the locker room simply because you're doing your job.
So how does Justin Gilbert show improvement?
Can't
during the
season.
It'll
all happen in the offseason.
That's why you got to let him play.
Yep.
Let him see it.
Yeah.
All right. When we come back, part two of Ray Farmer's press conference from yesterday on Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford.